fine listeners of the Cosmopolitan Hour. This is Erica, and welcome to episode 40. Before we get down to the business of being awesome vegan bitches, I wanted to make a serious plea for help on behalf of a great organization here in the San Francisco Bay Area. In the early morning hours of May 20th, the East Bay Humane Society in Berkeley, California suffered a fire at its office and shelter. 12 adoptable cats died in the fire, and the building no longer has electricity, running water, or telephone service. The remaining animals have been safely placed in loving foster homes, but the effort to rebuild is just starting. Please visit the Berkeley East Bay Humane Society's website at www.berkeleyhumane.org in order to donate money and learn more about what you can do to help. Volunteers are wanted to help clean up and rebuild the shelter, and more foster homes will be needed in the future. If you can volunteer, please email volunteer@berkeleyhumane.org. If you can provide a foster home to a cat or dog, email foster@berkeleyhumane.org. Even if you don't live near the San Francisco area, you can still help. Just remember to visit www.berkeleyhumane.org. That's BERKELEY humane.org. Thank you.
That was very sad.
It was sad.
Though I hear tell of a hero pit bull.
Oh, really?
That, like, lived in the building over or something like that. I don't know the story. I just saw a headline on the news. It was like, this tragic fire at the shelter, but this pit bull was a hero.
Aww, that's awesome.
Yeah, I know.
I like hero pit bulls.
I do, too.
There are a lot of them.
It's true. You'd think that they would try and do, like, breed-specific legislation honoring pit bulls,
yes.
You know, because there are so many of them that are heroes.
Indeed.
As opposed to stifling and outlawing them.
We didn't get that much response from our very controversial episode with Reese.
Whatever.
Although Mean Jean said that she's obsessed with reading through all of the comments on his blog. You're welcome. And let's see, we have a comment about Laura.
What do the people think of Laura?
Thanks for this episode. We need some Vegansaurus in Indiana.
Ah.
You all are a great resource for good websites. Thanks again from Karina.
Hooray.
Thank you, Karina.
Yes.
Yeah, I liked hanging out with Laura because she is a hilarious bitch.
She is. Laura is awesome.
Mm-hmm. And we were talking about some Vegansaurus drama earlier.
We were.
Ike's Place.
Yeah, well, should we talk about both vegan hot button,
yes,
Bay Area
let's.
Topics? Okay, let's start off with
stuff that only people in the Bay Area will feel relevance to and care
but
about.
But other,
it's juicy gossip.
They could be allegories for other people.
True.
You know, like
they
this
could be
this
like
could,
vegan soap operas, kind
right.
of.
Right, and you know, people who see these kinds of things happening in the vegan restaurants or vegan-friendly restaurants in their town can learn from our experience and know what to do. And feel like
they're larger life lessons in general.
I think so.
I feel like you can take lessons about honoring your parents from these true stories.
Definitely. So to get right to it, San Francisco is home to a restaurant called Weird Fish,
mm-hmm.
which up until February of this year was a kick-ass place for vegans to go.
Mm-hmm.
And they, as their name would suggest, they were pretty into fish, and they had, you know, fish on the menu and
mm-hmm.
everything. So it wasn't a totally vegan restaurant or anything, but they had some really, really great vegan options.
Really great vegan options.
Like vegan deep fried pickles and Hellfish tacos, which were seitan tacos that mm-hmm. were so awesome. They had really good vegan brunch, like tofu scrambles.
Vegan fish and chips.
Yeah, vegan fish and chips. How could I even
forget? The Buffalo Girls.
Vegan buffalo wings, which were, those were insane. Like, that was the best buffalo wing sauce I've ever had.
Yeah.
So in February.
I tooted.
Oh.
No, I'm just kidding.
Oh.
It was the chair.
the maturity.
Yeah, we're 12.
So, but in February, they decided
that,
the owner...
That one was you.
Yeah. Sorry. How rude of me. In February, the owner decided that he was bored of the current menu and wanted to take things in a new direction mm-hmm. and whatever, which is his right as the owner of a restaurant. And so he basically got rid of all the vegan options, mm-hmm. leaving a salad and I think there was maybe like a taco, but it wasn't, it was like basically...
It was like squash or something like that.
Not even that good. I think it was like chorizo, so it was probably like store-bought chorizo with like lettuce and tomato. Hooray! So he took, and then like everything else was just like the snottiest, most pretentious like fish-based food ever. So Vegansaurus wrote this up and basically called for vegans to make their voices heard and everything else.
Which we're pretty good at doing.
Yeah. And so the owner of Weird Fish responded by saying, you know, we're not a vegan restaurant. We're not beholden to the vegans, whatever. So,
Well, the thing that, about his response that pissed me off the most was about how, like, it was very, almost patriarchal in that it was like, well, we feel that you need to expand your options, and we feel that these food items are unhealthy, and that need to try something new.
Yeah, it was really
not like, hey, we really need your money, so we'll definitely listen when you tell us that you want a menu item or 10 that we've removed from the menu. So the patronizing tone of the email got to me. Firstly, you know, we know what's good for you, and we think you should expand your culinary horizons, you big whiny vegans. And like you mentioned, the whole like, well, we're not a vegan restaurant.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, we know that. We never said you were, but
And they're not required to offer us vegan options or anything.
No.
But I mean, given
our money is just as green as I pointed out to them when I wrote to them. And the other thing that they pointed out, which was so hypocritical and douchetastic and such a buzzword, was that they wanted to focus more on local and sustainable foods, which to me, first of all, negates the entire premise of a seafood restaurant, because there is no fish that I can think of that is sustainable. And secondly, one of the new vegan options was like a shaved papaya salad. And I was like, oh really? Are they growing papayas up in Sonoma County, up in the wine country? Is that what they're doing these days? Because I don't think that's local.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Well, they certainly wouldn't be the first people to go off on how local and awesome they are and then eat the papaya, as it were.
Yeah, so those were my main issues with their rebuttal to Laura, the Vegansaurus, whom we interviewed last week, or last episode. Anyway, continue.
So,
the saga continues.
So this was in February, and it turns out, apparently, that fairly recently and without any fanfare or notification of the vegan community, they added most of their previously popular vegan items back onto their menu.
Interesting.
And they didn't write a snarky blog post to all the fish eaters who failed to support their new and exciting and groundbreaking and amazing menu. Instead, they just quietly put the stuff back.
Yeah.
And so we are very happy that there is vegan stuff back on the menu, on any menu. But at the same time, I kind of got to shake my head at Weird Fish and just kind of be like, you guys. Because I think the thing that they forgot about was that, Weird Fish was pretty much... I mean, it wasn't only a destination for vegans. And whenever vegans would come to town, I'd be like, we have to go to Weird Fish. Because you can have fish and chips at Weird Fish. But it was also like, if I ever got asked, you know, where should I take my... meat-eating coworkers or friends or family.
My dad's in town from Indiana, and he won't eat anything that doesn't have meat in it.
Then it's like, you take them to Weird Fish because there's fish stuff and everything, it's a nice restaurant, you know, it's tiny, but it's like a nice atmosphere and everything.
Yeah.
They have good wine and everything. And then
it's a place where you can take your omnivorous people. Friends and coworkers, and you don't have to eat a salad.
Yeah.
And that's basically what they became when they changed their menu, because
you had to eat the salad.
You had to eat the papaya salad. Yeah.
But I think that they really underestimated one, how motivated people who eat fish and meat could be to try out your new menu, because I mean, if you eat fish and meat and all that stuff, then you can eat anywhere. Like, there's not as much reason to for you to make a special trip and go to a specific restaurant just because they changed their menu to have a slightly different kind of meat and fish.
Yeah.
You know? And but if you add something on that makes the vegan community excited, like Bender's is a great example, who has now, like, you know, a vegan black bean burger, which kicks ass, a vegan seitan barbecue sandwich, which kicks ass.
Which we're hopefully going to review next week.
Yes.
In person.
While we're eating it.
Yes. Sorry, people who hate to listen while we eat.
We'll maybe just do a few bites and then we'll finish it.
I was thinking, because we eat so much on the podcast, I should just create a special sound effect just for when we're eating.
I think that's a good idea.
And then we'll play it, and then they'll know we're eating, but without the annoying eating noises.
That's a good idea.
Like kittens meowing or something.
I think that's a great idea. I think you should do it. But, so yeah, I guess, you know, Weird Fish underestimated the vegans and underestimated the number of people that the vegans brought in.
You don't fuck with the vegans, man.
So,
not San Francisco.
Weird Fish, you fought the vegans, and the vegans won.
Oh, snap. Yes.
But really, everybody wins because there's more vegan options on the menu.
Yeah. Part of me is happy about that because I did really miss that, but at the same time, I'm kind of like, you know, we're in the privileged position being in San Francisco where we can say, fuck you, bitch, too late.
Yeah, you I'm going to pass you by and go to Gracias Madre.
I know.
Or Chaya.
You know, part of me, I'll admit it, I'm human. I can nurse a grudge like a motherfucker. And that's what I plan on doing until they acknowledge that they were wrong and they apologize to us, which I think, you know, this may sound like an overreaction for anyone, like, just hearing this story for the first time, but they were really, like, big dicks about it.
They were.
There were several rebuttals. People were nice and were like, hey, you know, we got green money, too, and we really love these things, and, you know, we don't understand why you would take something off the menu when your customers really like it. And, you know, like I mentioned, their whole, like, paternalistic, like,
bullshit.
We know what's good for you, and you don't want this stuff. No, we really do, and we're willing to pay you for it.
Yeah,
I think they do owe us an apology. I really do think they owe us. They owe all their customers, not just the vegans.
I think that at least they should have some kind of statement like, "Well, you know, we tried something different. It didn't work out.
Yeah.
We're gonna try. We're gonna go back to what we know works." Yes. Something like that, at least.
The arrowroot is on our face.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's I would like to see a business publicly acknowledge that being good to vegans is good for business.
Yes.
That's what I'd really like to see. I mean, even if they don't, like, get all shameful or whatever, like, as much as I would like for them to be all like, well, I guess you guys win this round.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to happen because the owner is clearly such an asshole. But I think it would be a really big service to vegans everywhere just to have someone go on the record and be like, yeah, treat these guys right because they will keep your business in business.
Uh-huh. Damn right.
And it's
especially
true.
Especially in San Francisco.
You know? I mean, here we are at the Mercury Cafe, a place that we've podcasted from before and we've talked about before that is super awesome. And that, like, when they first opened up, had pretty much nothing vegan. I wrote a Yelp review of them, like, one of their first weeks that they were open, and basically said, you know, hey, you should have some hummus for your bagels and consider having some, like, vegan options and vegan baked goods and stuff. And now they're like, they've totally got vegan stuff on the menu. They, like, are really up on what's vegan. They're like always trying out new vegan baked stuff. And
they let us host our vegan bake sale for Haiti here because it was raining, and that was fucking incredible.
That was
and
so awesome
of them, and they so totally didn't have to do that, and they did, and they rule.
Yes. But I mean, they're just such a good example of a place that, I mean, they're not a vegan place.
Yeah.
They have, you know, sandwiches and coffee and beer and stuff like that. And there's meat sandwiches.
Yes.
Like an egg and cheese kind of breakfast sandwich and all that kind of stuff. But, I mean, the guy who owns it is a nice guy and realizes that vegan money is good money.
Yes.
And, you know, is just willing to act like a decent, normal human being when someone comes to him with some suggestions. So
yeah, the current exchange rate on the vegan dollar is actually 1-to-1 with the American dollar. So
actually, I hear the vegan dollar is slightly above.
Oh, really?
Yeah, slightly over par. good. So it's beating the Canadian dollar by about 800%. Actually, I think the Canadian dollar is doing okay right now. But I told, like, man, I have a serious grudge against the Canadian dollar because when I was saving up to move down here, I put all my money in an Orange account, an ING account, which was great because I couldn't spend it. But anyway, so I had a US dollar savings account, and I had a Canadian dollar savings account, like Orange accounts, and I was such an idiot, and I kept all of my money in my Canadian dollar savings account.
Oh, no.
And, like, most of the time that I was putting money in, the Canadian dollar was pretty close to par with the American dollar. And then, like, right before I moved, the Canadian dollar fucking tanked and went down to, like, 65 cents on the dollar.
Man.
So I basically lost $2,000 of my savings because...
That sucks.
Yeah. It totally, totally sucked. But I will never do that again. Always keep your money in American dollars if you can. Apparently it's a good idea.
Yes. And in offshore accounts in the Cayman Islands, if possible.
Or Switzerland, if you're a Nazi.
Yeah. It's a good place to keep your gold tooth fillings that you collect. Those were air quotes.
Hey, maybe I do collect gold tooth fillings.
What do you know?
Doesn't mean I have a secret shower in the back of my... I'm sorry, that was a terrible joke.
So the other scandal that comes to us courtesy of Vegansaurus is Ike's Place.
Another local place.
This is a big story. It's even been in the New York Times. So
It's
a local story, but it's a big sensation.
The New York Times now has like a Bay Area blog.
Oh, I see.
And I don't know what the deal is. I don't know if that's like, it's kind of confusing to me. Why they do it?
Recognizing that San Francisco is the best city on the West Coast. Fuck
evidently.
LA. Fuck LA.
I know. Thanks, Huffington Post, for having an LA page, not a San Francisco page. What? Ever. Though I do like LA and I ate a lot of food there when I was down there last week. Anyways, so Ike's Place. Ike's Place is a sandwich shop that also is not an all-vegan restaurant, but is extremely vegan-friendly and has like an entire, like, 30-item vegan menu.
It's insane.
And these sandwiches are
it's
incredible.
Too much.
Like, They're just insane. Like, they have, you know, all these, like, specially made vegan dressings and sauces, and they have good vegan cheese and, like, good vegan meats and stuff like that, and lots of awesome veggies, and the bread that they make, like, they, like, bake it, you know, fresh, like, and their turnover is so high that, like, the bread that you get probably came out of the oven, like, 10 minutes before your order got made.
There are days where you will order a sandwich and you will literally have to wait for 2 hours because it's that popular.
Like, you have to call your order in, like, an hour and a half in advance.
Yeah.
And then head down.
But it's so fucking worth it. Like, I look at Ike's menu and I'm like, this is why the terrorists hate us.
Yeah. Oh, I know.
These are the freedoms they hate.
I know. But so Ike's was, like, you know, a real kind of local success story. A guy who opened his independent business and is now opening up a few kind of other branches.
And the flagship, it's the flagship, right? On 16?
Yeah.
It's about the size of a postage stamp.
Yeah, it's maybe 200 square feet, the whole thing. But I doubt it. Like, you can't sit in the restaurant. You basically go in, there's about 8 square feet for people to stand, grab their drink from the cooler, and, like, order.
Yeah.
And then there's, you know, the counters and, like, a person taking orders, and then, like, 5 or 6 people, like, furiously making sandwiches as fast as they possibly can. Yeah. It's kind of hilarious. But, so Ike's Place.
And on the one day in a year it gets hot in San Francisco, they wear their aprons over their underwear because it gets really hot in there.
Yes. I used to do that, actually. When I worked at a kitchen, when it would get really hot, all the girls would, we'd take off our pants and then just wear 2 aprons. So there's, like, one on the back and one on the front.
Nice.
And it probably literally saved my life
a
couple of times.
I approve.
So Ike's Place, you know, it's a popular place, and it's open from, I think, around 10 in the morning, maybe 11, to, I think, like, 8 o'clock at night. It's not open all that late. Maybe 9,
totally,
but
reasonable.
I think it's even earlier than that.
Yeah.
So it's, and it's got lines out the door for a lot of that, and there's the only real seating is they have a couple tables out on the sidewalk, but they don't serve booze. They are super awesome to the vegan community because they let us host, like, the first 3 or 4 vegan bake sales right out in front. which was great both for them and for us, because it's a great spot right in the heart of the Castro district of San Francisco, which is the gay district and is awesome.
It's also the cute dog district.
Yeah.
Officially.
Yes. If you don't have a cute dog, then
get the fuck out.
Get the fuck out district, yeah. So there are a few of Ike's neighbors who are less than pleased with Ike's success.
And by neighbors, we mean upstairs neighbors.
Yes. And apparently one of these neighbors has been making themselves...
been making a pain in the ass of themselves.
Yeah, for quite some time. And instead of ever approaching Ike and saying, you know, hey, we have a problem with the noise and the traffic that your business brings to our area, let's work it out, has instead voiced their frustration to the police in the form of countless complaints and is in turn spending our tax dollars
right.
on harassing their neighbor. And has also been known to, like, yell out their window at people.
Awesome.
And
good job.
Now is apparently taking it to the press and to the court.
Uh-huh.
Ike's place is currently under eviction proceedings as a result of this neighbor.
Yeah, because they are a successful business for no other reason than that they
yeah.
are a successful business.
And then now on top of it all, this neighbor is suing Ike's place for... wait for it. $1 million. $1 million. Quite a bit, and
yes.
we are both kind of the firm opinion that if you want to live right in the middle of one of the like most happening cities in
yes.
the entire world, actually,
yeah.
and especially if you want to live like right in the middle of the gay district, which is, you know, pretty well known for throwing a good party and staying
kind of
out late
for the nightlife.
And
yeah.
Yeah, then you don't necessarily have a 100%. Mm-hmm. unimpeded right to mm-hmm. have silence at all times.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like, it's important to remember that we're not talking about these people being pissed off about late night,
yeah.
3 a.m. drunks or something. They're pissed off by, like, basically the normal conversational level.
The threatening sandwich eating
hordes
of San Francisco.
Of people waiting in line to get a sandwich. Mm-hmm. I mean, I like, at 3 p.m. on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah.
You know,
I
don't know. I
think it's time for a reality check.
I kind of just have to, like, give them a big flip of the bird,
yeah.
really.
Well, it's just so, you know, I think about things like environmental racism, where, you know, there are people who have an incinerator built in their neighborhood because it's, like, a low-income, like, colored neighborhood, and they don't have the resources to fight against that. And, you know, people that have to live in much worse conditions and don't have the option of moving out, or, you know, like, they live next to a production plant that pollutes the air, pollutes the water, and they're already living in the lowest rent neighborhood in the city,
mm-hmm.
and they can't get a better job because they don't have education, or, you know, they can't move out because they can't afford it. And then you look at people who are living, again, in one of the most expensive, high-earning cities in the country. And I understand that, you know, they've lived there for 19 years, so they probably have
yeah.
mad, crazy rent control.
Oh, I'm sure.
Which is why they don't want to move out, because they probably can't afford it at this point. But let's face the facts. You live in a fucking city. You live in a city that is approximately 7 miles across.
Right.
It's geographically speaking, it's a small city, and there's nowhere to expand.
Right.
Because it's water on three fucking sides. So, you know... to be able to live in that city is an enormous marker of privilege to begin with,
yes.
even if you have crazy rent control. And, you know, it just reminds me of the people that move in next to the airport and then complain about the noise. It's like, you
yeah.
knew you were moving in to an apartment above a retail space, a food space,
mm-hmm.
and apparently it was a bar when they moved in. So
yeah.
they probably heard a lot more noise until a lot later in the evening when they first moved in.
Yeah.
At like a block from Market Street in the Castro, which is one of the busiest streets in one of the busiest, craziest, you know, partiest districts in the city. And
yeah.
Just get the fuck over yourselves, people. Seriously, Ike's has done nothing wrong here.
Yeah. And, you know, like, I think I've heard that that they've had to deal with things like garbage and people like patrons from Ike's. I'm not sure how much I believe this, but doing things like shoving their used sandwich wrappers and stuff like in their mailboxes, I have to wonder, really, I mean, if that has happened at all, for one, but
yeah.
And if it has, how much of that might be motivated by that person coming down and literally
yeah.
yelling at patrons in line.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that if I were waiting in line for some, like at Maggie Mudd's, which is, you know, the ice cream place, which is right in the middle of a residential neighborhood.
But on a pretty retail-oriented strip.
Yeah,
but
still right in a residential place. But I have to say, you know, if I was there and I was having a normal volume conversation in line while I was waiting for my ice cream, and someone were to come down and start yelling at me, and apparently they've tried to kind of like record people and stuff like with just really weird kind of like aggressive, not the adult's appropriate way to deal with the problem kind of stuff. I mean, yeah, I would probably shove my ice cream in their mailbox too because they're being an asshole and because they deserved it.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, not that I'm God and get to say who deserves whatever, but you know what I mean, right? I mean,
well, we've already established that we're incredibly immature, so.
It's so frustrating too as people who are attempting to open up a business.
Yes. We know how hard
that,
it is to get a good place and how much of a real gamble it is to be successful, and for somebody to be as successful as him, it's like, and it's not like there's a Starbucks there or you know, a Borders or a McDonald's. It's like this is a dude, a local dude who's reinvesting in the community.
Yeah,
he has by you know letting us have bake sales.
Yeah. I mean, by all accounts, except for these neighbors, I mean, he's really been a really great neighbor and citizen and everything else. But and it's really too bad that one or two entitled douchebags can make life so difficult for so many people. Because it's not, you know, if Ike has to move, it's going to suck for Ike and all of his employees. And it's going to suck for everybody that, like, goes there for lunch, all the vegans who have that in their community and, like, as a place that they can go.
He employs 45 people, by the way.
Yeah, and it sucks, too, for the people, you know, who do things like organizing the bake sales who want to use that spot and who, like, the last vegan bake sale, we weren't able to have it there because of these neighbors who were so upset about there being a charity bake sale in their neighborhood on a Saturday afternoon that we had to go and do it in a much less optimal location that was much less, you know, it just was not nearly as good, and it's really too bad.
I totally saw those neighbors punch a Girl Scout in the face once, too.
Really?
Yeah.
I saw them
She came to sell them cookies, and they punched her in the face.
Yeah.
Also, they walked up to a crippled old lady and kicked her in the crotch.
Jeez.
It's true. It's totally true.
Totally.
I wouldn't make that up.
I know you wouldn't.
I know. I know. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's...
Just deal with the shit that you got, because odds are you're very, very lucky.
And you know, the thing that I said to you earlier was, you know, you live in a city. Living in a city, and especially living in the heart of a city, for one, it's a choice, but for another, it's a gamble, you know?
Yep.
I mean, sometimes you will luck out. You will have a great place that is right in the middle of all the action that you want and have none of the action that you don't.
Yeah.
But you have to understand that it's a gamble, and you have to understand that if you live in a city, especially right in the middle of one, you don't have an absolute right to have everything you want.
Exactly.
That's what living in a city is about, and that's part of what makes living in large places like this so great, is that you have to compromise, and you have to, if you have a problem, work it out with your neighbors.
Yeah.
Not just, you know, things
like... that's living anywhere, really.
True. But, I mean, cities, you're so much...
Yeah, that's true.
You know, like, I would love to see this kind of thing happen in New York.
Yeah.
You know, like, where...
You can't
sue somebody for being too noisy, like in the middle of New York on a Saturday afternoon.
Yeah.
I mean, it just doesn't happen. And I think it's, as much as I'm generally a fan of San Francisco taking, you know, people's rights seriously, this is kind of one of those cases where it's like, you know,
get the fuck over yourself.
Yeah. I don't know. It just, it seems like, I mean, I can't imagine what it must be like for them to do anything else in their lives. I mean, for one, what do they do when Pride Week comes?
Yeah.
Like, Pride Week in the Castro is intense.
Yeah.
That's not quiet.
Yeah, do they lean out their window and yell at all the gay people for ruining their straight quiet time?
Yeah. And I mean, and what happens if they are at a restaurant and there's a crying baby? Or
yeah.
Like, do they sue those parents?
I know.
God only knows.
Oh, entitlement.
Yeah. Everyone
people
who lives in the Bay Area
is fucking nuts.
Yeah, they are. But you should go to Ike's place and have a sandwich.
Yeah.
And give them a pat on the back.
Yeah, because those sandwiches are fucking delicious.
Yeah.
They got voted the best gut bomb.
Yeah.
Forget which.
A proud honor.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, that summarizes Ike's. It's a gut bomb.
True.
And it would be the best mistake you ever make in your life.
Yes. I want one now. And I just ate a sandwich. If it wasn't Saturday and I wouldn't have to wait 3 hours, I would totally go for it.
Crazy people in their crazy houses brings me to my current occupation, which is census enumerator.
Right.
I haven't really talked about it because we've had interviews the last two episodes, but it's a crazy job.
Tell us.
Well, I'm an enumerator, which basically means I get a list of houses in my neighborhood that have not mailed their census forms in.
We still haven't gotten in touch with our enumerator.
Ooh,
we are very
bad. You are bad.
I mean to. I keep meaning to, but then it's like...
They might reassign you because you're a problem person.
I remember, like, I have their... They list me a thing saying to call.
Yeah.
And the only time that I remember to call is when it's like 11:30 at night.
Yeah.
And I've been drinking.
Well,
and
I can remind you, right after we podcast, call your enumerator.
Yeah,
thank them.
Unfortunately, in the like 5 seconds that it takes me to get from your car to my door, I will forget. And no malice, but
I'll call you then. I'll be like, call your enumerator.
That would actually be awesome.
So, so basically, I go to people's doors and I knock on their doors, and I help them finish their census forms. And I would like to say that this is a huge step for me because I'm not a people person. I don't like any kind of job where I have to talk to people on the phone, and like going to their houses on top of that is like my worst nightmare. So for me to actually be doing this is kind of a huge step forward for me.
Yeah.
although I still don't enjoy it anymore. Although I found ways to power through it, and it, you know, because it does feel like a job, then I feel like I can put myself in a separate mode.
Right.
But,
yes, I understand that. I know that mode.
So, I would say like 80% of people are really cool. But then there's like that 20% who are like batshit crazy or total assholes. And of course, those are the ones that always stick with you.
Has anybody actually answered the door wearing a tinfoil hat?
A tinfoil hat. No, but I would say half the time the door opens, I get a waft of marijuana smoke coming out at me. And one, bafflingly, was like this middle-aged white guy who had a big cloud of pot smoke coming out as he opened the door. And he was like this totally cranky asshole. And I'm like, you're a white dude. I'm presumably heterosexual. You're middle-aged. So basically, everybody listens to every single thing you have to say. And you've got the most amount of privilege in the world. And you're stoned off your tits. What the fuck are you so angry about? Yeah, it's been an interesting experience. I don't know. I probably should have come more prepared to talk about that. But if anyone has specific questions about the census, I would welcome them. You may ask me any specific questions you have.
I think I've asked you my only specific question. It's not suitable for on air, so.
And I will reassure anybody listening who still hasn't filled out their census form and is dodging their enumerator that all answers are confidential. And I had took issue with this in the training. We're not allowed to report anything we see that we think is scary or weird. Like if a kid opened the door and they had like a black eye and their dad, you know, came to the door and was like screaming and yelling and like shoving the kid or something, like by law, we cannot call the cops. And if we do, we risk losing our jobs. So that's how seriously the Census Bureau takes your confidentiality.
You could always make like a big list, and then once you're done, I guess I can kind of understand because they want people to feel like they can actually answer the door and answer the question.
Yeah, though a lot of people don't really understand that part of the confidentiality, and they think I'm there to take them away.
Right.
So it's interesting. But I think I am actually bound by the confidentiality for, like, 19 years.
So, holy shit.
Like, yeah, like, 10 years from now, I can't come to you and be like, so you know Bob Smith on 9th Street? That dude's totally Korean, you know?
Damn, that's some juicy gossip.
I know, right? You had no idea.
Totally Korean.
I mean, that's the only kind of shit they ask, right?
Oh, my God.
It's been, and I also had to sign a statement that made no sense to me, like it was, you know, government jargon, but the gist I got from it was that if there was to be a secessionist movement, you know, say, for example, California, it could happen, and they went to war with the United States, I'm forbidden by law from informing the secessionist movement on data that could help them in their, I don't know how census data would help the independent state of California win a civil war against the United States, but
who knows?
Apparently I've signed an agreement not to do that, so.
That's awesome. They're really covering all their bases.
Yeah, I know.
Thorough. Good and thorough.
But I learned some interesting things about
America.
Yes, that too. But also, because the race section of the census is always really weird, it's controversial pretty much every time they do a census, and one of my favorite blogs, Sociological Images, did a really interesting comparison of race sections and survey or in censuses throughout the years.
Uh-huh.
And because this time around, the big controversy is that Hispanic origin is not considered a race. Mm-hmm. So the idea is that people who are of Hispanic or Latino origin are supposed to self-identify as white, but which is insane. And a lot of people are saying, like, no, my race is other, and then filling in, like, Mexican or Puerto Rican or whatever.
Right.
The other controversy is that Arabic people and North African people are supposed to self-identify as white. And I've you know, had a handful of people who had that conundrum and they didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
And you're not allowed to advise them. You're not allowed to say, like, oh, well, you can click other or you can fill in, you know, you're supposed to put white or whatever. Like, you have to let them make that decision. You have to ask them the question as it's worded three times before you're allowed to, like, say, well, I could do this. So, you know, you feel like a total robot and they're looking at you like you're crazy and you're deaf and you're not hearing them. It just, like, totally highlights, you know, what a complete social construct race is. And
yeah.
And another controversy is that the black section is worded as black, African American, or Negro. And I don't say the word Negro because that just doesn't fly around here. But apparently the reason they included that is that there are a lot of older generations who do self-identify as Negro. Huh. Although, I don't know, like, there are people that I've met around here who are like, what the shit is this? it's really interesting. So Sociological Images did this really interesting comparison, and one of the things that struck me was, like, in 1890, for example, the race categories were limited to American Indian, Chinese, Japanese, white, black, mulatto, quadroon, octoroon. And it was like, you know, whereas today it's just like black or white.
Right.
Or you can be both, you know?
Right.
And it's like, and basically no other races existed in the eyes of the United States, you know, other than like Chinese, Japanese, American Indian, white, black, and all the different, you know, gradations between the two.
So crazy.
And, you know, nowadays, of course, like the current census, there's like 20 different race options, and then there's like three additional boxes where you can fill in specific things. Like there's an additional box for you to fill in the name of the principal tribe if you're Native American.
Okay.
There's an extra box for you to fill in other Asian or other Pacific Islander, and there's an extra box if you just have another race that you want to put in that isn't even listed. So,
right.
It's interesting, and yet, despite all that, it still manages to not include everybody.
Right. Well, it's crazy. I mean, I actually wanted to recommend, there's a great episode of Radiolab, which I think I've talked about before, but it is so awesome. Seriously, everybody who is not listening to Radiolab should listen to it. It is...
Except that one story about the ape, like, broke my heart.
Lucy?
Yeah.
Lucy, yeah. It's
really
sad. There's some sad stuff on there, but it's basically a science podcast, but done kind of a la This American Life, but not quite so, you know,
right.
Like, I like This American Life a lot, but every once in a while it gets a little bit, like, kind of,
yeah,
I don't know, it's hard to describe, but it just is, like, a little bit too much, even though I love it, but Radiolab is just, like, it's so great, it is such a great show, but they did an episode, probably about a year ago or so on race, and, something that I did not realize at all, because I'm ignorant, is that there is no biological basis for race.
Yeah.
And I heard that, and I heard them talking about that, and it just, like, blew my mind. And they did all this, like, genetic testing of people.
Uh-huh.
Like, one of the hosts is of Lebanese descent, and he got a genetic test to, like, see what his race was or whatever, and it said something like, you know, 0% Middle Eastern origin or something, and he's like,
I think I remember hearing some of this, yeah.
And then there's a man who was, had always identified as a black man, and, like, came from, you know, a black community, black family, everything else. He tested, and he got 0% African American, and he was just like, what do I do?
Yeah.
It's a great show. It's really interesting. I mean, everything they do is so great. I mean, listen to the Parasites episode alone. It's so
awesome.
Great. But they just recently, like this week, did an episode on tumors.
Ooh, awesome.
Which was very fascinating.
I have a macabre interest in tumors, I'll admit to it.
And they actually did a really good one recently, too, about animal minds, like how animals think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I would definitely be interested in hearing that.
Seriously, like, even if it's
what the hell is going through my dog's head.
even if the subject of whatever show it is they're doing isn't necessarily something that piques your interest, like, just from reading it, they're always so interesting.
Awesome.
The Animal Minds one was really cool. It started off with them recording at a church in New York City that once a year does a blessing of the animals.
Oh, the St. Francis thing?
Yeah.
That's
and so
awesome.
It was so cool. Like, the recording was, you heard all these, like, barks and animal noises, like, echoing up, like,
that's
through
awesome.
The church. And just, you know, like, when they interviewed a bunch of people, like, you know, this is my hamster and I want her to get blessed.
Aww, and that's so cute.
As much as I think Catholicism is a bunch of hogwash,
it's still cute when people bring their animals to be blessed.
It really is, and it's always so interesting to me too as a vegan to hear people who really, like, love their animals and love their pets and stuff, and, like, love them so much that they will take them to church to get them blessed because they don't want to risk their animal having any kind of bad problem in the afterlife, but who eat, like, hamburgers and stuff.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Cognitive
dissonance.
Like, a lot of the time, makes me really mad, but sometimes I'm just like, seriously, I have no idea what's going through your head. Like, I know you have the best of intentions. What the hell is going wrong there? You know?
Well, we've all been there at some point.
It's
true. Unless you're Pranjal.
Right. But he has even less of an excuse, because he ate meat a few times, right?
That's,
like,
rebellious when he was a kid. Yeah.
Kid phase, yeah. So, and he knew better. So he's worse
think,
than
yeah.
us.
No, I think peer pressure is a pretty valid excuse.
Oh, yeah.
No, wanting to be cool. Your Zubas.
Come on, Pranjal. Eat the hot dog.
Yeah.
Eat
it. Gotta get a Bugle Boy shirt and chomp on some Chicken McNuggets.
Yeah. Sorry, that was my, like, topic-changing
okay.
plug for Radiolab.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I will start subscribing to that, because I hear a lot of their stuff on, like, This American Life, and I hear you talk about it, and I like stuff that tricks me into learning. That's good.
Seriously, it's so great. And, like, if you're doing anything like sewing, or if you're, like, going on a long walk or whatever, and, like, or a long drive or whatever, it is the greatest.
I listen to podcasts when I do the mountain of dishes piles up.
Oh, yes, yes,
because,
that's good too.
Because my boyfriend never does that, and mm-hmm. I can feel safe saying that because he doesn't listen to the podcast. So,
neither does Mike.
You for all of the dirty dishes ever. I wanted to talk about feminist issue.
All right.
Apparently, France recently banned outright all hijab in public. Which Belgium did a few weeks ago.
They've been making noise about that for years now. They finally actually just outright banned it?
I believe they did. I know they definitely did in Belgium, where it carries a fine.
That is fucked.
Let me see what the fine is. Oh yeah, full face veils.
Right.
So like burkas and veils that cover the nose and mouth. To me, it just seems like a real no-duh issue. And it's kind of dismaying coming from Europe, which you often consider to be very progressive,
right?
And, you know, groovy, and it made me think of this conversation I had with a friend who's like total like crusty anarchist,
right?
In a metal band, you know, he was a really cool dude, and he was saying something about because he was from Philly, and like when I moved to Philly, it was like the first time I really saw a lot of Muslim women because mm-hmm. there were a lot of converts, like, you know, African-American women and men who had converted to Islam.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was the first time I'd really seen, like, women wearing hijab. And so he was talking about all the women in Philly who converted to Islam, and he couldn't understand it, like, why you would convert to a religion that, you know, or a certain interpretation of a religion that dictates that you wear hijab.
Right.
And he said something like, oh, so you want to be oppressed? And, like, I didn't have the presence of mind to say something about it, but at the moment. But, you know, I've often thought, like, there have definitely been moments where I'm like, I've seen the appeal of it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, when I'm walking down the street and some guy is, like, making unwanted advances towards me or saying shit about my body, when it's mm-hmm. like, who are you to talk about my body? I don't
right.
even know you. You're not my doctor or my tailor, so shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
and I can see the appeal of it. I mean,
yeah.
You know, obviously in a perfect world, we wouldn't need that because we wouldn't think that, we wouldn't view men as such primal animals that can't
control
rein in
themselves.
Their urges.
Yeah.
That this kind of thing is necessary. And obviously in an ideal world, you know, people would feel free to walk down the street looking however the fuck they want to look without strangers feeling entitled to comment on
right.
it. But, you know, obviously our world isn't perfect, and I can totally understand the appeal of that.
Yeah, it's a tricky issue because I think it brings a lot of things to the table. I mean, for me personally, I think that it is kind of the antithesis of feminism to say,
yeah.
hey, woman, you can't choose
yes.
this for yourself.
Exactly.
Let me, you know, another more enlightened woman, or worse, man,
yeah.
tell you what's feminist and what you
yes.
should be doing to be empowered. I think you're not empowered if someone else is
exactly.
telling you to do it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I mean, I know that, you know, the whole tradition and everything of the hijab comes from that place of, you know, saying, well, we should remove the woman's bodies and faces
right.
and hair and whatever from the men's sight because the men can't, you
mm-hmm.
know, because it's the woman's responsibility to cover up, not the man's responsibility to
yeah.
control himself or whatever.
Treat women with dignity.
Yeah, and then on top of that, like, you know, I'm an atheist who tends to view pretty
yeah.
much all religions with a healthy dose of
yeah.
probably mean-spirited derision.
Yeah.
Sorry, but, yeah, so, I don't know, it's,
Well, it's like, for me, it's like saying, it's like telling a Sikh guy, like, you're not allowed to wear a turban because people
yeah.
might make fun of you.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, is the ban, like, I assume that the ban in
it's
Belgium
in public.
Is,
yeah.
okay, and I assume that it's probably motivated by, what is it, like, what's the purpose? Are they saying that it's because the hijab is oppression and they're outlawing it because they don't want to allow this form of oppression of women, or?
Let's click on this related link and try All
right.
to find out. Promoters of the band announced the veils as a threat to public security
I
and
see.
Affront to women's dignity, a negation of gender equality. That's ironic.
Mm-hmm.
Or an intrusion of religion on public life.
And see, that's the thing. I mean, as much as I don't like religion, generally, as an institution. I just don't think that my dislike of it means that other people shouldn't be allowed to practice it, and even, and, you know, wear or practice manifestations of it in public. I mean, that doesn't affect me at all. I don't care.
I totally had the fines wrong. In Belgium, the fine is 15 to 25 euros, so it's $20 to $33, and imprisonment up to 7 days. But in Paris, they're planning to bring the fine up to 150 euros, which is $200.
That's a lot of money.
That is a lot of money. You know, to some extent, I can understand the security issue, and I can understand why people are saying, you know, yeah, you need to show your face on your passport photo.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But when, you know, when you're out in public and you're minding your business.
Walking around, yeah.
Yeah, like, I don't see how that's a threat to security any more than a loose-fitting garment would be.
I don't think that people should have to be identifiable at all times just because they're in public.
No, not at all.
And I mean, I guess, I don't know, which is partly why I am so opposed to the Arizona immigration law, which I am too upset about to even talk about, but have to say that anybody who thinks that that's a good law can fuck off and die.
Yeah, we don't want you listening to our podcast.
Right. Except, oh my God, I can't believe I haven't told you about this.
Do tell.
You'll have to edit parts of this.
Okay. But I'll put in some funny sound effects.
I'll have to cut out some sentences so as to not reveal the information that I don't want to reveal. But, so I went down to Palm Springs last weekend to go to the Film Noir Festival there and to see my mother-in-law and grandmother-in-law, who are really lovely, nice people.
Uh-huh.
Except that they totally support that immigration law in Arizona. And we were having breakfast one day, and I don't know what exactly started up, but they started, and along with Mike's aunt, who is also, like, a lovely, lovely person, they just started, like, going off on illegal immigrants. And,
oh, my God.
And, like, and the law, and, like, you know, how... And the thing is, Mike's mom had one of the only things that I still don't think is a good reason for supporting that law, but that I can kind of understand where she's coming from, which is that she was a single mother who was denied access to any kind of social programs and social assistance because she, like me, never had very much money herself, but her family did. And so because of her family's wealth, even though her family, it was her stepfather, wasn't sharing that with her necessarily.
Not a lot.
She was denied access to social programs that she should have had access to, and things like daycare. And she raised Mike watching a lot of, like, illegal immigrants getting access to these programs that she couldn't get access to, even though she paid her taxes. And, you know, I still think that the gripe there is with the government.
Yes.
not with the illegal aliens and everything else. And that the response should be to grant better access to people, not to kick out all the illegal immigrants from the country.
Yes.
But I do kind of understand where that comes from. You know, I mean, and that's kind of what all three of them had similar experiences, where they weren't able to access social programs and things like that because people who were here illegally were granted priority.
Well, apparently, you know, illegals are entitled to free healthcare and free welfare. And, you know, like, I mean, you talk to people who are like, totally
which is insane.
Because,
I mean, I mean, you have to sign a document saying that you will not access any social services for 10 years. So you have to pay taxes for 10 years and, like, pay into the system for 10 years before you can have any kind of access. And even then, I think it can be quite a bit more difficult.
It's
outrageous.
Yeah, I think these are lies that people like to, you know, circulate. They're rumors that they like to circulate.
But
urban legends about, you know, all the undocumented people getting free shit.
Well, and the thing that really struck me was that, you know, people think about illegal immigrants and they have a very clear image in their mind of who that is. I really wish that we could start putting a more accurate face on that. I mean, it's not just, like, Hispanic people. It's people from other places, and people who have all kinds of reasons beyond just being lazy assholes for wanting to live in this country. And some of them are reasons that I think the vast majority of people who support the racist, shitty, overly broad law in Arizona would understand if they actually ever sat down and talked to one of these people, you know?
Yeah.
Which is the really frustrating thing, is it's just... It's all... The people who support that law just seem to be saying... It seems like a big element there is, like, personal responsibility. Like, this person, why did they do things the wrong way? Why couldn't they just do things the right way?
Why were they born poor?
Yeah. And it's like, you know... That's not the case. You know, yes, I'm sure that there are some people who want to commit crime and whatever, but I think that the percentage of people who are immigrating here illegally because they have intentions of being criminals and stuff is just so small.
Yeah.
And the thing that really has been blowing my mind about this whole thing is, you know, all these people who get up on their, like, high horse and condemn illegal immigrants and say, like, you know, what they're doing is terrible and bad and blah, 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 and it's hurting people. Do not get up on that same horse when they talk about, like, the big banks and the conduct of the banking executives and things. Now, those are people, individuals, who have really hurt people.
Yeah.
Like, really hurt people.
Yeah.
And people get way more worked up about illegal immigrants than they do about Bernie Madoff or whatever.
Yeah.
And that guy, like, cost thousands of people their livelihoods, their savings, like their retirements, like their lives.
Yeah.
And that's something that's really been blowing my mind, is the way that people are able to get up on this whole personal responsibility thing and talk shit about, you know, some of the least privileged people in our society who do the shit work that nobody wants them to do and that are poor and, you know, and don't have access for the, like, vast majority of them to social programs that could help them out.
Totally.
But when it comes to the most privileged segments of our society who, like, knowingly and, you know, who have every opportunity in the world to do very well without fucking people over, choose to instead fuck over thousands.
It's the American dream.
Yeah. Well, it just, I mean, it seems like either way you could kind of, you could justify illegal immigration on capitalist grounds, but you know, people aren't willing to do that. They're only willing to do it for multi-billion-dollar executives who, you know, have 18 mistresses, 50 yachts, and don't pay their taxes.
Yeah, totally.
Whatever. I don't know. That's kind of my thing. I kind of hate anybody who gets on that whole personal responsibility kick.
Definitely. Well, before we wrap up for the day, I have one final rant to go on.
Okay, go.
What the fuck? Why the fuck do we have another fucking Toy Story movie and another fucking goddamn Shrek movie? This pisses me off
more
than it should.
I'm with you on Shrek. I'm not with you on Toy Story.
Oh, really?
Yeah, well, did you see the second one?
I didn't see any of them.
They're good movies. I'm sorry. I'm not like I'm not a Disney movie person. I'm not one of those people who has like their Winnie the Pooh doll at home or whatever.
Oh my god.
Those Disney people kind of freak me out. And I'm sorry if you're one of them.
It. Yes.
But if you're like really into,
if you're an adult and you have like Winnie the Pooh stuff at home.
I mean, I understand having an affection for the books or movies that gave you so much joy in childhood, but yeah, I don't know. But I'm not one of those people. I don't go out and see every animated movie that comes out.
You're not, say, the kind of person who has their bridal shower at Disneyland?
No.
True story. I know a friend who had to attend a bridal shower in Disneyland.
I would just shoot myself in the head.
Why?
Actually, that sounds kind of fun. But not for a bridal shower.
Yeah, I mean, it's like...
I would totally go back to Disneyland and do that Pirates
like
ride
smoking,
again.
Smoking weed before you go to see Saw. It's just like a really fun activity, but in a really horrible setting.
Fair enough. but Toy Story, like, it's good. They're well written. They have some adult themes, not porn, but like they're all about like growing up and stuff like that, you know? So, like, it's these toys who are kind of these static figures in childhood and having to deal with, like, the people that, you know, like, their people growing up and everything. And And, like, the animation is seriously, like, fucking crazy good. Mm-hmm. I'm not, like, a kid's movie person. Yeah. I'm not one of those people who's like, I wish I was still a child, so I'm going to...
I'm 40 years old, and I'm going to dress like Tinkerbell for Halloween.
Yeah, yeah, I'm not...
or every other day.
I do not need that kind of escapism. Yeah. But that's why, I mean, and Toy Story 2 is actually better than the first one.
Huh.
So I have high hopes for both the animation and
like
the,
my
whatever.
Here's my but Shrek, from, which honestly, is very cynical. Terrible. I feel like Toy Story 3 is aimed, like, when did the first Toy Story come out? 1995, yeah.
Yeah, and the sequel came out in 1998.
Okay.
Or 99. I can't
read. Okay. So here's my cynical thinking on this. Toy Story 3, I think, is a shameless cash-in on a nostalgia. Mm-hmm. So the first one came out when I was 15, so I was probably like, fuck that baby shit, I'm too cool for that. So that's why I never saw it. And then Toy Story 2, I was like, fuck that capitalist shit, I'm not spending my money on, you know, this evil anti-revolutionary shit. So here's my cynical point of view, which is that this is 15 years after the first one.
Yeah.
So the first one, the target audience was like, you know, kids between the age of like 4 and 10, maybe.
Probably a little more. I mean, that's kind of one of the successful things about the movie is that it's written so well that it can be entertaining to anybody above the age of 5.
Okay. So my thinking is that, you know, for the older end of the age spectrum, they probably got kids now, or, you know, some of them probably have kids now. So they're like the double whammy here of cash cow is that they're hitting their nostalgia buttons because, you know, like, if I can imagine, like, E.T. came out when I was 5. You know, if, like, E.T. had come out with a sequel, you know, I probably would have gone to see it.
Right.
Because it's nostalgic.
Right.
So, you know, they're hitting people's nostalgia buttons, and they also probably have kids now, some of them do, and they're going to be like, oh my god, I love this movie. I'm going to take my kid to see this movie. Uh-huh. So that's my cynical take on it.
Right.
As for Shrek, I'm just personally disappointed in the human race that Mike Myers is earning money from anything other than royalties and or working at a gas station right now.
Yeah.
Those are my feelings, because dude should not be employed by anybody.
I'm not a Mike Myers fan, but he's a good voice actor, you know?
But at the same time, like, Shrek, I feel like even before Shrek came out, we're like, we get it. You can do a Scottish accent.
Yeah.
We fucking get it, Mike Myers.
But I mean, have you seen Shrek?
No.
You?
I know.
All right, I'm gonna call a little bit of bullshit on. Because
but this
again,
is, I mean, even more than Toy Story, this is the fourth fucking movie.
Yeah,
put
no.
it to fucking rest, you greedy bastards.
Well, that's the thing about Shrek, is that Shrek was a fairy tale, and the first movie was great.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, the animation was great, and the dialogue, and the writing, and it was great. It was really good. And, you know, it had a really good message, and everything. It was a positive movie. It was good for kids and adults and everything else. And then all the sequels have sucked. And it just seems like they're getting worse and more ridiculous and just further away from, like, the beginnings of it where it was, like, you know, it was a movie that actually I thought had, like, a lot of heart and a lot of really good things to say. And then now, like, just to water that down by producing these, like, meaningless, shitty sequels is just kind of like, ugh. I mean, again, like, I'm not a Mike Myers fan, but he was good for the part. I mean, I'm sure that they could have found someone else and everything.
Yeah.
So I guess I'm half with you, is what I'm trying to say.
All right. Well, you can send your movie reviews and census questions and other issues to thecosmopolitanhour@gmail.com.
Yes, you can. And please do.
And hopefully we should be back, like, actually.
Like, really
within
soon.
A week.
Yeah.
With a review of Bender's sandwiches with sound effects and
some
chewing noises. Yeah.
Yes.
And I want to try and get better microphones, too, because our microphone kind of sucks.
Yeah.
It's broken, and it's leaning at half-mast like a sad,
Dick.
Sad wiener. Yeah. All right.
On that note.
Yes.